With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass. This week featuring me, Harriet Minter, Emma Sexton, and Scarlett Douglas. Each week we'll bring you the best bits from our Talk Radio show, Badass Women's Hour. This week, we meet one woman who has found the value for 101 countries around the world. Do you know why poets gather in Nicaragua? Or why steadfastness is a British character trait? She does, and she explains it all to us. Plus, we look at the steps your company can take to become truly gender equal. So, first up, we meet Yael Nebo, co-director at Genderscope. She talked to us about working hours and how you can create a code of conduct that should ensure gender equality throughout your company. So, did you know that roughly 30% of your time at work is wasted on admin? This is from research which shows that we're all spending probably about 12 hours a week doing tasks that we don't need to do. We are joined by Yael Nebo from Genderscope to talk about this. Yael, why are we wasting all this time?
Oh, that is a very good question. Well, I think mostly the TIDE research that you are referring to talks about decision makers in SMEs.
Mm-hmm. And which is small to medium enterprise, so yes, small businesses, really.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. And more specifically for me as a gender consultant, I want to look at the gender statistics, right? So one of the things that they're talking about is how men work more than women. Men decision makers work more than women decision makers, both overall and also in national holidays. Another really interesting statistics is about how women decision makers feel more out of depth. So doing things that they're not really at their element just to make the business run.
So does this say then that actually we should have more men in leadership if they are working longer hours and they feel more confident with what they're doing? Is this an argument for why we should have more men at the top of business?
No, I think overall I think we should all work less, if anything.
I like that.
Right?
Yeah. And tell us with Genderscope, so your gender consultancy, what mm-hmm. do you go into businesses to look at?
Well, we have a 4-step process, and it is a cyclical process, and it's a very important part. So when we go into a company, we conduct a gender gap analysis. So we look at a company both horizontally and vertically, and we try to find the gap, and each company is unique. And once we do recognize the gap, we work with management to create a gender-sensitive code of conduct or a gender-responsive code of conduct. I think it's a better term. And it is a product that is comprised of a company's vision, a company's values, but the most important part is the actionable commitments. Mm. So each company is committing to create changes in the company, and these changes are benchmark, they are time-bound. And then the most important part of the process, I mean, there is the delivery of the commitments, but then the most important part is the monitoring and the evaluation of the gender code of conduct. It's a living, breathing document. It's not something to put in a drawer. So we work with companies and we monitor their progress to make sure that they are delivering on their commitments.
When we talk about a gender code of conduct, what sort of stuff does that cover?
Well, it's a brilliant question. And we look mainly at issues of leadership. So, for example, representation. We look at issues of HR. So, for example, how do you treat your LGBT employees? And we look at issues of communication. So how do you present your company? What are the messages that you put out there in the world? And also internal communication.
And so when you're talking, because when we think about talking about code of conduct, for me, that sort of says a lot about the culture of a company. Mm-hmm. So actually, how does a company treat its employees? How do we manage that question of banter? I'm thinking about the Weinstein case that's going on at the moment. You know, how do you create a culture where there isn't an abuse of power? How much of that do you find companies want to build in to their organizations?
I think it's a really big issue for companies. And I think a lot of companies and leadership, people in leadership, really do want to create a change and they're not sure how to go about it. So the Gender Responsive Code of Conduct's purpose is to change organizational culture. But what happens a lot of the time is that companies make big statements and they don't know how to deliver. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the Code of Conduct is that we have very clear sets of commitments, and we change company policies, we do trainings, we advise on legal issues to make sure that we really check into every gap that the company has, including the culture.
Do you find that there's common excuses for organizations as to why they can't necessarily change any gender imbalances that they've got within businesses? Because I still feel like there's a real struggle. It's still not mainstream, is it? We're getting there, and it's great that there's an organization like you, and clearly there's organizations that are committed to wanting to implement this change. But what are the excuses that you see that come up for business owners, which are causing barriers for them to have, you know, a better gender balance? Mm.
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to understand that, you know, businesses are not created in a bubble, right? So our society is gender imbalanced, and therefore, you know, businesses do have this issue. I think one of the things that I come across a lot is, you know, things like there aren't enough women with the experience that we need, or, you know, like there aren't enough LGBTQI people that, you know, we can push forward. I would say that especially in STEM professions, so, you know, technical professions, there is this issue, and we can't, you know, deny that there is different genders go towards different professions. However, I don't think that that is an excuse. I think that this is something that we need to address seriously. One example with a company that I remember working with, they decided that they're going to start an academy for schoolgirls to push them towards STEM professions if they wish. So encouraging young women to start a career in this field is one way to do it, for example.
Mm. So you said as well that the code of conduct is something that you can't just put in your drawer, put on a wall, you've done it, you've signed off, you've got your certificate. It's constantly changing. So how do you stay on top of all of that? Of the changes and everything, it's always evolving, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of reading.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, I'm curious and I love anything gender related. I have many years experience in that field. So I do a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. I do, I talk to many people, and also every company I go and work with gives me mm-hmm. a new perspective and understanding of what's coming next, and also how different cultures interact with this issue.
Okay. Are you also seeing a business impact? I think there's within the business community, I feel like the barrier to change is there until you can prove that it's going to have impact on the bottom line. So do you see these companies that you're working with, not only is it, you know, the right thing to do and that they should be doing, but are they seeing any kind of unexpected business impact from working with you and implementing this code of conduct that they perhaps was unexpected, or have you seen a different business impact that you weren't expecting?
Well, there is ample research showing how gender diversity benefits companies. I mean, one of the things that really needs to change is to understand that gender equality is not a nice to have. It's not just an ethical issue. Yes, it is an ethical issue, but it is really a competitive edge for businesses. We're talking, you know, higher return on sales and higher share value. We're talking about better decision-making processes, opening new markets, better image for businesses. So all these things do come back once a business makes an investment in making their company more equal. But it is an investment. And that is a really, really important thing to say. You can't just put, you know, a nice declaration saying we want to be gender equal and then not put some money and time behind it to make that happen.
Mm. And then for you as well, have you come across a company that you've wanted to go towards and say, look, I think that you should do this, that and that, and they've said no? Or is it very much companies bring you in? How does it work?
Well, so far it's been a different process with each company.
Okay.
Hopefully in a few more years I will have a better idea of what is the process. We've been quite lucky that a lot of our clients came to us.
Okay.
For example, we're working with the London School of Economics with their entrepreneurial program, and they came to us and they said, oh, we really think that first of all we need to have a gender sensitive code of conduct of our own, and we want you to train our new businesses to make sure that they are gender equal so that we have better foundations rather than solving problems. Mm. Another company that we're working with is the UN. We were working with UNDP, the development program. And again, they came to us. And then there are other companies that we go and we kind of pitch and sell. So some companies actually recognize the issue and the problem and come to us, and others we kind of need to go and say, hey, you're going to benefit from it if you work with us. So it's I'm not sure if it answers your question.
Well, no, it's good to know there's a good mix, basically. Yeah.
Ideally, the fact that, you know, really big organizations come to us is quite amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. It shows that there are companies out there that want to change and want to make sure they implement these code of conducts. That's fantastic.
Absolutely. And there is change in our society, and this is a really good example of it.
For smaller companies who maybe don't have the resources, or sort of looking at it being like, I just don't have the money to invest in this, but I know I want to do something. Mm-hmm. Where would you recommend they start when it comes to thinking about the gender makeup within their organisation and how they best balance it?
Good question. I mean, the process that I'm describing right now, you know, the whole kind of four-step process is kind of the ideal thing that I believe really brings about serious change. But for any small business, I would say take a few hours to consult with gender consultants, because people who come from the outside really bring a valuable perspective. And then whatever commitment you decide to make, make sure that the leadership is accountable. So live your principles. Again, don't put the idea in a drawer, but really make sure that if you're advocating, for example, for better work-life balance in your company, then have the men leaders in your company go at 4 o'clock to take their kids out of school, right? I mean, you really need to live your values and to make sure that if you lead a business, however big or small, that you do represent the change that you want to see in your company.
Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us and talking about that.
Badass Women's Hour is Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. Three women, one podcast and a whole load of badass. As long as we've had our coffee.
Now, do you notice how sometimes you travel to a country and instantly get a sense of what it's like to be there and what the people are like? Well, our next guest has been studying 101 countries in depth to try and work out how she could summarise them in just one word. Dr. Mandeep Rai joins us to talk about her new book, The Values Compass.
Do you know why you make the decisions you do? Do you know what drives them? Do you know where those beliefs and ideas and values come from? Well, our next guest went on a worldwide exploration to try and understand why specific countries have specific values. Dr. Mandeep Ray went to 101 countries to try and find the unique value that identified every single one of them. Mandeep, welcome to Badass Women's Hour. It's lovely to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thank you. That was an awesome introduction.
Oh, thank you.
You know your stuff.
At least in this case. Back to that in 20 minutes time. We'll see. At what point did you go, I hadn't even thought about this until I saw your book. I hadn't thought, of course, there is a kind of core uniqueness to every single country. When did you realise that?
I think when I first left the UK at the age of 11 and went to France on a school trip. Actually, we were going to Spain, but we went by bus or by a coach through France and into Spain. And I just remember being gobsmacked at how different it was, how people moved differently, dressed differently, thought differently, everything. It was just, it really just struck me. And I can still remember every minute of that trip. And it's been like that my whole life. If you ask me about Cote d'Ivoire, I can tell you what happened. If you ask me what happened yesterday, I'm not so sure. So, you know, familiarity kind of blurs. Yep. Whereas when you're somewhere new, you're just so alive and you soak things up. And so while traveling or whenever I'm in a new place, I just become like an observer. And you notice whenever you hit the ground anywhere, I'm sure all of you feel this, there's a moment of, wow, look how they do that, or look how they speak, or look how different X is. That happens everywhere you go. And I'm sure as you go through the book, so many of these values will feel really familiar to you, and others may be less so.
How did you distill it down to one clear value, didn't you, for every single country? Like, did it take you a long time to do that? Because I'm like you, I'm fascinated about the differences, but to really distill it down to kind of a foundational value that you think is driving the culture and the decisions, how long did it take you to do that?
Good question. I thought it would take me 9 months. It took me 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So the book was meant to be called Letters to My Unborn Child, and I thought I would just whittle these off. And actually, they started off as emails. So when I would land in a new country, I'd often be reporting. And after all the reports, and normally on the last day, I'd just send an email back home to my friends and family, normally written late in the night when I'm just kind of gathering everything together in terms of what had happened. And everyone used to say, one day these should be in a book. And I didn't think at the time that I was speaking about values, but upon reflection, you see, for example, just because we started with the first country I'd been to, which was France, you see the way people stand up for their rights in France. You see the way people are willing to protest. And in fact, I would experience that. I've now been to France many, many times, and I experience that every single time I go.
Yeah, they like a strike, don't they?
And so you actually, when you start thinking about values, you realise that there are certain things that happen again and again and again in certain places. So, for example, with Spain, it's enjoyment and how they take pleasure in the smallest things, like the sun on their face or breaking open bread for the first time. And you don't just see that in Spain. You also see that when you speak to Spanish people in other places, like, you know, they'll talk about how they just went for a morning swim and just the small things and how much enjoyment that gives them. Or often I think about India because I know India so well, and I know how faith permeates every single part of India. Like, they, you know, often you will be named according to your faith, you'll marry according to your faith, you'll find a job according to your faith, or you'll ask a pundit, or something will happen. Every decision pretty much is made according to faith. And then you wouldn't even get into a rickshaw if you didn't believe in something. And normally all the gods are on the windscreen. And they, you know, like, you just see faith everywhere. Or respect in Japan, where it permeates every strata of society, from kindergarten children who are taught to put their shoes, their outside shoes, in a corner and then put on their indoor slippers just to go into school, and, you know, taught how to put their umbrella away or how to fold things up. I mean, respect is in everything they do. So that's just a few examples that probably resonate.
I'm going to say you have quite a few here. You've got Vietnam's resilience, Argentina's passion, South Africa's forgiveness, English steadfastness, Croatia's friendliness. How long did you spend in each country to be able to work out exactly what it was about them that was separate? So Sri Lanka's joy, how long were you in these places to know what it was?
I would say if you were asking for an average, probably a month.
Okay.
Often I've lived in many of these places and sometimes it's shorter. But I would say the average was a month, just because I'm normally on assignment and you just, you know, you try and seep in the culture in order to report anyway.
Can I ask you, what makes a value? How do you define it?
A really good question. So someone asked me recently, are there even 101 values? So a value, my definition of a value is something that you value, something that you think is important. So for some people that will be joy. For other people it will be recognition. For a third person it might be cleanliness. Like all these things are things that people think are really important. And if I were to ask you what's important to you, you wouldn't really, one, see them as values, and two, you'd find it quite hard to answer the question. But if I said to you, think of a hero, think of someone you really admire, and then tell me the attributes that you like about them, or in fact, the reason you admire them is because they have those attributes. They're the values that you actually treasure or think are important, but we just don't think of life in the, you know, as values, but it's all happening in your subconscious, and actually your decisions are made according to your values.
Were there some which really surprised you? So I was just looking through the list, and the one that sort of stuck out for me was Czech Republic and craftsmanship, and I wouldn't have thought that at all. And yet when I think of, I've only been to the Czech Republic a couple of times, when I think of the beauty of some of the woodwork and some of the design there, that's very obvious. Which were the ones that surprised you?
Really good question. So I feel that with the Czech Republic, actually, I saw that attention to detail in everything, whether you see it in the buildings, you see it in the way they'll make a table, they'll even stop and take a long time to make something with their own hands. It's kind of called golden hands. They really treasure their golden hands and do making something from start to finish and repairing something rather than just throwing it in the bin and getting a new one. So I saw that everywhere. What surprised me, I guess a difficult one and one that was hard to work out was North Korea. Because one, it's really just hard to work out that society in the first place. And there's what they're being told about you and what you're being told about them. There are many kind of smokes and mirrors between the two societies. So while I was there, I was wondering how much of the truth am I actually allowed to see here and how much of this is true. But upon reflection, I came up with the value of loyalty, because they're having to be extremely loyal to one another. Sometimes they're having to be extremely loyal to the regime. I mean, it's all based on loyalty to the regime. Like as soon as you visit, even as a visitor, you have to go and visit the mausoleum of the dear leader and the great leader, and you have to pay your respects and you wear a badge, and you're just, you know, if you don't do these things, you're seen as a traitor, and very quickly you can get into trouble. So as I was leaving the country, I didn't realise, but I had to keep all the receipts of anything I had bought. And there was a painting in my suitcase, like a rolled up poster, actually. And when the guards who were checking my luggage opened the poster, they said, "Where's the receipt?" And they didn't look at me. They looked at, so you have a chaperone the whole time you're there. You're never left alone. You always have like a guide. But the guide is really someone who works for the government. And they looked at him, and he just went white. I mean, I've never seen that kind of fear. And they didn't look at me again, and he couldn't look at me again. And I kind of just froze, because he was then escorted away by two guards because of this, because of a receipt. Now, imagine the amount of how you have to keep one another's back. And if you don't, how easily things can go wrong. And there's no one asking, "Oh, was this a misunderstanding? Or what was your intent?" There is no conversation.
So they just thought that you stole it because you didn't have a receipt?
I don't know if they thought I stole it, or whether he hadn't explained the rule, or whether something had... I don't know what they thought.
The protocol had gone wrong.
Yes. But the fact is that something had gone wrong. This is not the way it was meant to be, and someone was going to pay for it.
Wow. Oh my God. You must have such an amazing
worldview now, having been to all these countries and really been observing and being curious, is there anything that you saw that actually was common of everybody? Maybe, I don't know. I'm just really I'm really interested that you just have this unique view of the world, and I'm kind of interested to know what have you seen now? What are any observations that you've made from going to all those countries?
So one value that I think everyone thinks they have and everyone kind of almost fought over was hospitality, which is true. Everyone actually extends themselves and are super gracious to a stranger or to a foreigner or to a new person. And so everyone was like, well, no, we are the most hospitable nation. Every time I talk about it or ask about it, the first value, if I say to someone, what do you think, what are you most proud of? What value do you think you stand for? They'd all say hospitality, because that's what they're exemplifying. But I gave it to Turkey because they truly are ridiculously hospitable. They were like, give up their bed, or, they'll have they'll make a separate guest house just in case a guest comes, or there'll be a living room that no one ever touches just so that the guest comes, or these like piles of nuts and, dried fruit. So that would be, a common value. And actually, I think we are so much kinder, so much more compassionate and so much more loving than we think we are. And what we are is really just a reflection of our context, of our geography, history, nation, how much sun we get, the lifestyle we have, which is often not because of us, but just because of the environment we're in. And so if you were to be in Sri Lanka, I think you would find yourself, for example, smiling more or having many more expressions of joy, not because you're not joyous here, but just because here there's different things are valued. And so you just, I think the biggest thing I learned that is humanity wants to evolve into its highest self. And so these values have come up and are driven by us trying to get the best out of ourselves. But what that value is determined by your context. Mm-hmm. But they're all positive, great things.
I mean, this is absolutely fascinating. We're going to keep talking to Mandeep after this break.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast. You can get in touch on all the socials on @ Badass Women's Hour. We will be back after this.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
We're talking about the new book, The Values Compass, What 101 Countries Teach Us About Purpose, Life and Leadership by Dr. Mandeep Ray. And we've got 101 countries to get through. Not quite. We're not going to do all of them. Mandeep, we were talking before the break about the values that are shared by everyone. And you talked about how everyone thinks that hospitality is their number one value. Were there any, I was just looking through the list of values here, were there any values that maybe you didn't necessarily like before you assigned them? So there are some which are obviously lovely. We all want to think that we're diplomatic or that we're great at forgiveness. But I was thinking about maybe some which are like moderation. Who really wants to be known for moderation? Tunisia, apparently. Or directness. The Netherlands. So direct in the Netherlands. Yeah. Were there any that you kind of, you warmed to more as you knew that nation better?
Brilliant. There are certain values that I definitely don't possess as much as others. It's good that you mentioned moderation, because I think there are values that almost clash. Mm-hmm. So being entrepreneurial and being moderate don't quite go. You almost have to be unreasonable to break all the barriers and become entrepreneurial. And for example, with Belarus stability,
I can't find it on the list, but I'm sure you're right. Belarus stability, well done.
I remember thinking, really, are we going to kind of value stability? Do I value stability? Not really. I value freedom and curiosity and expression. But when you think about what they've been through and how tough, how rocky it's been, I'm sure if I had that history, I would actually value stability too. And then so I guess that would be an example of a value that I can understand. I don't crave it, because actually I feel like sometimes I feel like I have too much stability and I'm wanting to rock the boat a little. But I understand why you would want stability. If you've come from a war zone, you crave stability.
And are there any countries that you had a preconceived idea about and then when you got there it was completely different, the total opposite?
I remember not knowing what to expect from the Dominican Republic, mm-hmm. and giving it enlivenment. You might think, what is enlivenment? But enlivenment is kind of when you talk with your whole body, when you express yourself with everything you have, and you are hit by their kind of dynamic, passionate, enlivened nature as soon as you land, on all forms, like whether it's the way they make chocolate, whether they are involved in fashion, whether they're authors, politicians, like musicians, they're all just at the top of their game. Even people who are like starting off in any profession, they really embody it and enliven it. And I was super impressed by that. I didn't expect that at all.
Can I read a little bit from from Nicaragua? Because Nicaragua caught my eye because the value you've assigned it is poetry. And this is just so beautiful. So he said, some countries have artists, architects or athletes as the symbols and bearers of their national culture. Some are defined by geography, political ideas or religious culture. Nicaragua alone is a land that lives, breathes and expresses its identity through poetry. Here, there are more poets per capita than anywhere else in the world. The most famous and revered Nicaraguan, Ruben Dario, was a poet. The president, Daniel Ortega, was a poet in his youth, and so is Vice President Rosario Murillo. The two are married. I mean, how wonderful. I would never have thought of that about Nicaragua, but it is a country so imbued with poetry and romance that your president and vice president are married and both of them are poets.
And so many people in the cabinet are poets. And so that's how they express themselves. In fact, that's kind of almost how their constitution was formed and what they live by and what their revolution happens by. It's through poetry. It's incredible.
Does it make you want to live in a different country? I'm just going back. It's just really got me thinking.
I mean,
now.
I have just, like, I've put my visa in for Nicaragua. I'm going.
But from what you were saying, you know, if you lived in Sri Lanka, then maybe you'd experience more joy. And suddenly I'm just getting this different perspective on travel. So now you've seen this, you know, got this world view. What do you think is the... Well, I suppose it's a personal thing, maybe. Sorry, I'm kind of like speaking and thinking the question out loud. But like, do you actively thinking that you would like to live in a different country?
All the time.
Right. But could you pick where?
No, if I'm ever asked where do you want to live, I would say anywhere. Anywhere. Right. I say anywhere but here. But what I mean is anywhere new, because I just want to always be experiencing the new. And my husband often says, you don't actually want to live in these places. But that's not true, I do. But I think he says that because he just can't fathom how a family would exist going from one place to another, to another, to another. Yeah. So he kind of keeps me rooted here, which I hope won't last long, but whilst we have small children, might last for a while. But
I'm just interested in your book. To me now, it's just giving me a different perspective on travel, because I'm like, instead of going for like the normal things where you go, well, I go for the culture, or I go because the weather's nice, or the scenery's nice, or the sea's nice, it's like, oh, actually, I want to experience their joy. Values, I'm going to go there. So this, to me, is like, actually, I think this might be my new guide to holiday destinations in 2020.
Oh, wow. That's great. Or to the world, right? It's a guide to the world.
Yeah.
But it's also a guide to you. So one of the aims of the book is for you to figure out your core values. And to your point, when you were introducing it, how to make decisions. And once you know out of all those 101 or more, whatever you value, you make your own list, what is most important to you, you live your life in a whole different way. Mm-hmm. And the way you spend your time shifts so that it's aligned with what actually is important to you, rather than you just reacting to whatever's in front of you.
Yeah, and your values are created, like you say, with the countries, their values are created from their history and their culture, and lots of things come through. Individually, our values are formed through our own life experience too, right?
Yes. But very much from our nation. We just don't, honestly, if you were to be put anywhere else, you would be different. And it's hard to think that, but it's actually the case. Often we only put ourselves into another hotel and have exactly the same environment, even though we're in another country. Mm. But it's to really shed, like, to go into their way of life, then you see the difference. I remember wanting to just be Cuban in Cuba, and that meant not being in the dollar economy, not going into a hotel, not for people to actually not even know that I was a foreigner, so that the police wouldn't get in the way and people were allowed to talk to me. And as soon as you are able to cross that line and permeate, then you just, then you can really experience it. So it does make you travel travel differently.
Mm. So I know this book is out on the 23rd of January. I know this is the first book, but I'm already like, is there a part two? Is there another 101 countries? Because I need to know, I need to know the values.
Yes, I feel like I need to do another 99. Mm. It's hard to know how many countries there are in the world because different lists classify it differently.
Yeah.
In my head, I just feel like 101 and 99 sound good. So there might be, or it might be, it depends which list, you know, which kind of definitive list I choose for how many countries there are in the world. But I definitely feel like it feels incomplete, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's absolutely beautiful. And I think we've all fallen a little bit in love with the book and with you. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us. The Values Compass, What 101 Countries Teach Us About Purpose, Life and Leadership, is out on 23rd of January. Dr. Mandeep Rai, thank you so much for joining us here on Badass Women's Hour XL.
You've been listening to Badass Women's Hour. If you like the show, then help more people find us. You can tag us or talk to us on social media using @BadassWomen'sHour. Or you can be really lovely and leave us a review and a rating. 5 stars, please. It helps boost us up the podcast rankings and allows other people to find us. We'll be back next week with more badass guests and in-depth chat.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.